This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open-air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward coasts. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions, the children of those who could not be killed. We pour Ashe. We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, John
Henry Clark, John G. Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
Ashe. History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Okay.
First on the track.
I be feeling like I don't be popping enough, I be humble. I'ma keep showing my ass if I want it. Hang up the phone on her ass, block the number. I told you don't play with me, nigga. And she be acting funny, probably think a nigga need it. I thought I was faking, she say I'm a cheat. They thought I was taking, I'm ready to mingle. The fuck is you saying, la nigga? I do my little dancey dance. I put my pants with bands, quit playing, la nigga. And I don't think the talk is cheap, cause now when they talk to me, they paying me, nigga.
I probably say the word nigga too much.
I'm a real nigga, I don't be giving a fuck. Tommy Hill figure fits with the shit coming up. When you stay down like this, you rock Vinny.
Okay.
He broke himself, put a boot on him. I hit the bitch, put her out, put a move on, bitch. He wanna be just like baby, for real on the low, tryna do what I do, don't.
Yeah.
Just so you prepared, I'ma let you know. They probably told you I'm scared, but I'm ready though.
No.
The industry can't take the hood out of me, bout to go get some hair from a ghetto hoe.
They do it nasty.
Pull up new whip and it's flashy. Gun on my hip and it's plastic. This the deluxe. I like her, but don't give a fuck. I'm fucking her up, I'm a daddy. That's how I live. She told me she wanna have kids. I told her don't know what that is. That ain't how we speak. I broke her heart in a piece. She probably gonna call Dr. Phil. I be feeling like I don't be popping enough, I be hopping. I'ma keep showing my ass if I want it. Hang up the phone on her ass, block the number. Told you don't play with me, nigga. And she be acting funny, probably think a nigga need it. I thought I was faking, she say I'm a cheat. They thought I was taking, I'm ready to mingle. The fuck is you saying, la nigga? I always had a thing for ghetto bitches with the trinas. I'm known to set it off like Queen Latifah. You wanna make billboard, come get a feature. You fucking with baby, la nigga.
Yeah.
Hot nigga, number one song on the billboard. He still got a grind with. You ain't gonna never see me hate on no nigga. I think it's worth better, I'm trying to go shop with him. Yeah, what you need, la nigga? We having the bags of gas and they moving fast. And you can imagine that bitch on the way. My broke has the pack like it's mad.
Go!
Having my way with the act, come on. Fuck on the floor, fuck a mattress. They probably saying I'm not on y'all ass. I feel like, hey, are we talking about practice? I be feeling like I don't be popping enough, I be humble. I'ma keep showing my ass if I want it.
We talking about
phone on my ass like the number. I told you don't play with me, nigga.
Talking
she
about
be acting funny, probably think a nigga need it. I thought I was fake, but say I'm a cheat.
Practice.
They thought I was taking, I'm ready to mingle. The fuck is you saying, the nigga?
I shake your money maker, don't let that money maker. I shake that money maker, don't let that money make it. Oh, shake your money maker, don't let that money make it. I shake that money maker, don't let that money make it, baby. Yeah, I shake that money maker, don't let that money make it. You know I accommodate you, can I accommodate you? I make you come, I hate you. I know you're home lately. I turn your curly hair into that bone straightening. I make you moan, baby. It feel right, don't it? I know I'm wrong, baby. That pheromone fragrance. Can't miss no car payments. I kiss her earlobe. Like what you doing later? The bucket alligator. Them lanes agitator. I'm talking natural beauty. No makeup applicator. She say I killed the pussy. I seen the affidavit. She blew my cap off. Like I had graduated. The roof decapitated. The booth contaminated. Hey, check my face card. I bet it's laminated. My jewelry carbonated. My yard 100 acres. I like to nominate you. To roll my dice in Vegas.
Yeah.
I shake your money maker. Don't let that money maker. I shake that money maker. Don't let that money make it. Oh, shake your money maker. Don't let that money make it. I shake that money maker. Don't let that money make it, baby.
I don't do cap, I don't do yap, I make it happen, I don't want rap, I just one tap, bitch make it clap, blah, 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 put it that back, blah, 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 back, and now that that's back, it used to be flat, what happened to that, then she made it black, she said how it feel, I said it feel like facts, then she start twerking, just like a circus, you can ask Barnum, you can ask Bailey, we don't need love, we just need favors, put that on repeat and don't change the station, daddy ain't cheap, and mama ain't basic, and mama agree that daddy the greatest, and all I can see is ass, I'm an amazing, this dick a tournament anchor, this dick a jumping cable, then let my tongue invade you. Then let that come and scrape it. Shake that money maker. Shake it lemon pepper. Like a salt shaker. Give me high blood pressure. Yeah.
I shake your money maker. Don't let that money maker. I shake that money maker. Don't let that money maker. Don't shake your money maker. Don't let that money maker. Shake that money maker. Don't let that money maker. No A&M, Alcorn, Jackson State, Grambling. You know what I'm saying? Texas Southern, Skeegee. Morehouse, TSU, Fort Valley. You know what I'm saying? We black.
You are listening to Black Sister Talk, So You Can Breathe, with host LaWanda Chambers. Black Sister Talk radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at whereyoucanbreathe@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. You can go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Hello, 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 everyone. I would like to take some time and thank everyone for being here with us to breathe and ask that our listeners call in to participate in the community therapy discussion. Join us on Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe. 215-490-9832. Now let's get to it. For my regulars, you know how it goes. And for my newer listeners, we like to start the show off by paying respect to our ancestors. Today's ancestral profile will focus on Zelma George. Zelma Watson George, philanthropist, opera singer, and political activist, was born December 8, 1903 in Herney, Texas, to Samuel E. J. Watson and Lena Thomas Watson. George's father was a Baptist minister, and because of the requirements of his profession, they moved frequently. In 1917, the family moved to Topeka, Kansas, where daughter Zelma graduated from high school. After graduation, George attended the University of Chicago, where she earned her bachelor's degree in sociology in 1924. Later that year, she enrolled in Northwestern University, where she studied the pipe organ, while simultaneously enrolling as a voice student at the American Conservatory of Music in Chicago in 1925. In 1927, George began working as a social caseworker for the Associated Charities of Evanston, Illinois. A year later, she became a probation officer for Chicago's juvenile court. In 1932, George accepted an offer to serve as the Dean of Women and Director of Personnel Administration at Tennessee A&I in Nashville. Wanting to earn a graduate degree, she applied for and was granted the Rose Mall Scholarship and began spending her summers at New York University. It took her many years, but in 1943, George received her master's degree in personnel administration from New York University. In 1937, George married her first husband, a newly ordained minister, Baxter Duke. The couple moved to Los Angeles, where she established the Avalon Community Center and became the organization's executive director, managing a staff of over 200 workers. In 1942, George and her first husband were divorced. That same year, she received the Rockefeller Grant to continue her studies in African American music. She moved to Cleveland, Ohio, to pursue those studies and there met her second husband, a prominent lawyer, Claiborne George. The two married in 1944. George continued to work on her dissertation while working in the Cleveland community, where she volunteered for such organizations as the Conference of Christians and Jews and the local branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. In 1949, George became the first African-American woman to sing the title role in an all-Black production of Giancarlo Minotti's opera, The Medium, at the Karamu Theater in Cleveland. She continued in that role on Broadway. George continued her education, however, and in 1954 received a PhD in sociology and intercultural relations from NYU. In the 1950s, George became an advisor for Dwight D. Eisenhower's administration. The president appointed her to the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Armed Forces and the Executive Council for the Society of African Culture. In 1960, she was appointed as an alternate in the United States delegation to the 15th General Assembly of the United States Nations. The 15th General Assembly of the United Nations, my God, today. In 1966, George became executive director of the Cleveland Job Corps Center for Women, a position she held until her retirement in 1974. George won many awards for her life achievements, including the James Dodman Nobel Award in Human Relations in 1985. Zelma Watson George passed away on July 3rd, 1994 in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Let's lift her up in spirit. Let's rest in power, Miss Zelma. She has had several accomplishments. And I must say, being the first opera singer of all Black cast is phenomenal. All right? Being a political activist and rising up to that position of prestigious, being a advisor to the president, and just seeing the several jobs that she carried out until she got to that position, it's just inspiring for me. So what's going on, y'all? It's Black Sister Talk. This is the last show of the year. I want to hear some damn energy, because let's end 2020 on a right note. Let's end 2020 on a right note. Okay, let's do that. Let's do just that. Hey, Miss Divine, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am, I am here.
Hey, Miss Divine, go ahead and say what's up to the people. We ain't gonna have you too silent back there now.
Hey, everybody.
Speak up, speak up, speak up.
Hey, so can you hear me?
No, can I hear can me? Hear you. I just messed with you. I can hear you just fine. So, y'all know it's a happy Saturday here on Black Sister Talk. I want to thank you for joining us. I am Miss Wonder, your therapist's favorite therapist, giving you yet another unfiltered candid conversation. Today is the last show of the year, and we are definitely going to breathe while talking about grief and loss. As we all know, this year has presented us with all sorts of immeasurable challenges that some of us have yet to process due to the throes in life. We are not only grieving the loss of our loved ones, but our lives as we knew it and have known it, as every day is ever changing. We are all working through our grief in whatever way seems available. However, today I ask that we breathe so we can release and face what we are really feeling and not just thinking. Let's remove the facades, the titles, the I don't want to look crazy, the I'm this, the I'm that, and be vulnerable. Grasp on to what's real and feel okay, because you are here with us on Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe and know that you have a safe place here with me and the rest of the team. So let's talk about this grief. I want to hear from you all. What's your year been like? You know, this is going to be a show just to decompress and get things off your chest. I mean, I'll be the first one to let you know this has been a hell of a year. I've experienced losses not only in relationships and not, family relationships. When we're talking about relationships, we're not just talking about husband and wife, but we're talking about people. You know, this social distancing is ruining relationships, and trying to keep in contact with people. So we're grieving the loss of the relationships. I mean, we're grieving the loss of employment. We grieving the loss of a break because kids are home from school and running around, and that may have uprooted your schedule, and you may have still could have had your job, but because of life circumstances, you might have had to quit your job just to be at home with your kids. And so that's your life as you knew it lost, because now you have to pick up and figure out how to continue to keep moving and survive. So when you're trying to survive, feelings are sometimes put on the back burner because you're thinking about the love of the situation and the sacrifices you have to make for those who you are in charge of. I mean, we've lost so many things. I mean, just to think about my loss, I've lost 7 people in a week and a half time from Thanksgiving to the beginning of December. And it has been traumatic to lose that many people back to back and not be able to process and say, damn, you know, soon as you're ready to deal with one situation, you had another coming up. So I must say today, y'all gonna breathe because I damn sure gonna breathe. Okay. That's all I'm
talking.
Because we on the verge of some, we are on the verge of a new beginning, okay? And we're going to go ahead and purge everything. We're going to do some deep breathing today. We're going to get to it because it's a necessary thing. It's vital for you to be able to move forward. So I'm going to let it hand it on over to Brother Joshua Mann, the mystical prophet, and I hope that Ms. Devine chimes in as well. And we're going to open up these lines in just a bit so you guys can go ahead and share some of your thoughts and what you need to breathe on, okay? Let's get it.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Josh Jermaine, the true mystical prophet who always brings hidden truth to light. It is an honor and a privilege again to be able to have the opportunity to be here again for the last show of the year. And I feel as well, we got to have some energy today because, you know, we're still here. Today we are here to address the overwhelming cycles of grief and healing I think we all have encountered this year alone. From my personal standpoint, this year has been ground shaking and overall transformative. I can agree once again that this year for me has been personal on a lot of levels, though it's just, you know, it's just so, it's painful to know who you think you are, but it's such a joyous feeling to know who you can be and knowing that you always got time to have that. Every day we have a blessing to be here and to know that we are here. And I encourage all my listeners today to remain hopeful and to know that if you are here after this traumatic year, you do have purpose. And let my mystical prophecy come to all my listeners and know that if we are here today having this talk, we are here for a reason, and we need to start living with more intention. And despite all the losses that have happened, though, I mean, I still remain hopeful. I lost a very important people in my life, you know, in a matter of 2-3 months that I can honestly say I'm still grieving from, you know, even just, you know, learning the stages of grief and from denial to acceptance. You know what I mean? It's a stage that we all got to take place. But I think the hopeful thing is that I think we all have experienced these type of feelings, though, that we're not alone, even if we think we are, you know. So I hope this conversation, though, allows people to just remain hopeful, remain optimistic about everything, though, and just know that, you know, we all on the bottom. The best we can go is go up from here.
Well, I'm Ms. Devine, and this year has been okay for me. I've had more experiences of grief in a matter of just relationships that have just kind of died off. Things that I thought that were one way, relationships that I thought were a certain way. You know, I just found out the truth about things and the situations that died. So I experienced grief in that kind of way. So that's what I said about that.
Yeah, that's deep too. And I think on my end, I think it's funny you said it because when I said that, I think my grief for me is probably just learning how to let go of structures maybe I thought I had to have to make me feel comfortable or to validate me, which is family. It could be just the fact that I'm just on my mystical journey and I let other people's opinions kind of, you know, sway me off from that. You know, maybe that grief is maybe me validating myself and knowing that no matter what they're talking about, I got to do me, you know, and, you know, so I do agree with you on that. I think my personal standpoint of grief, it looked like it's family. It like it's family and it looked like it's my career. It looked like everything around me is on an evolution, you know what I mean? And I think the grieving is just me learning how to accept that.
I think that's really good. And that's a very good point. While grieving other people, I think that one thing that we don't take into consideration is sometimes we lose ourselves in our lives. And I know for me, for this year, I lost parts of myself that at the time I didn't think I was ready to let go of. And that was really hard. Just parts of myself that I just did not want to deal with. And I did not want to let them go because I was comfortable holding them. So in a sense, you know, that's really deep, Josh.
I mean, you know what? I think you living this life that you living in 2020 has been a lot of stuff going on. I think, and shout out to everybody that lost a loved one this year. I mean, my heart is heavy for the one that, you know, that had a transition this year though, you know, and had to leave loved ones that had to encounter this traumatic experience, just knowing that, you know, not only their life is not going to be the way it is, but they losing people that they value and honor, and, you know, and my heart go out to everybody, you know. But I mean, I just got to say that from my personal standpoint, because it's like, as much as we losing people, we losing our life, you know, it's like sometimes, though, you know, we got to wake up, you know, and unfortunately, though, we're going to have to wake up the easy way or the hard way, you know, and it is what it is. Human beings, we're going to learn by pain, you know. I wish we didn't have to go the painful way, but it's just sometimes, though, I think it's the only necessary way we can go, and that's going to come with loss, you know. Ain't nothing going to be alive, ain't nothing going to die. You know, we got to just learn how to have that balance. But it goes back to what you said, Ms. Lando, that we got to learn how to, you know, attach to our inner fragmentations of ourselves. You know what I mean? And we got to learn how to align with that. You know, we got to learn how to agree with the fact that we let ourselves go. We got to agree with the fact, though, that, you know, we allow other people to dictate our life. You know, we had to allow other people, though, to change our own trajectory where we gave up on ourselves, you know, and I think that's the biggest grief anybody can go through, is knowing you gave up on yourself, knowing that you were so much stronger than what you thought you was.
That is so true.
Come on, breathe on that. Breathe on that. Somebody else is in control. Somebody else is in control. You're not in control. And that would be the issue. That would be the boom, boom, boom theme of that. Looking at loss for what it is. Loss of control. Okay? Come on, Lulu, while you over there snickering. What you got to say? Because I know.
Oh, you know, I got to
tell. What the hell? We got Ansel and Gretel.
I just want to thank the Lord for giving me the wisdom. And I love to share it. 2020, I don't look at it like the end of the year, because when we wake up the next day, it's the same day it was. You know, I mean, it's not the same day. But
same day, same shit. COVID-19, face mask.
Well, I'm going to take it back to 1999 when my father passed away and I first started teaching. I have gotten my first job in a school that I felt that I could help people. And as my dad was dying, he said, "Now, when I go, don't you take off a day of work, because I won't be here for, to borrow you extra money when you can't pay your bills." I'm like, I ain't never asked my daddy for no money. He's making a point to me, because he had cancer. And he said, "You keep going, because I'm gone. There's nothing you can do." And then when everybody, I would take my lunch hour and go check on my dad at my sister's house. And he was still there. And they were saying to me, I heard him, I said, bye-bye, Daddy, I'm going back to work. And I heard him say bye. And then that lady that was there taking care of him, I said, did you hear him? Did you hear him? And she said, no, I didn't hear him. But it was for my ears only. So, yes, it hurt it. I couldn't even cry when he left here because he was my best friend. He was my dictionary. Everything I need to know, I would always go to my father. And he would give me good advice. And the best advice he gave me, don't mourn those that's going on because they can't come back, but you got to live tomorrow. And so I feel sad, and I have to say goodbye to people. But it was the best advice that he gave me because my sisters got upset at me when I went back to work on the second day. It was their decision. They were telling me what to do. I needed to work. I needed to perform. And it's like, what can you do? And so by listening to them, I went on and took two more days off. And that check was tidy, like my father said. I can't borrow no money from them, and he's still gone. Now I'm sad. And so from them on, I tried to love people in a way that if they're gone, I did my share.
So, that's right.
That's why I don't have any, because I have lost quite a few people in my family in Chicago. One whole large family. I mean, it's like, and I'm like, I talked to my cousin, and he's an inspiration too. He says, I just regret that all the family couldn't be here because we are very supportive of each other. But he said, well, she's gone, and she was like my mama. And we had to talk about it. Now we talk about the future. But what I find is that our people don't take care of their health. And I ain't talking about eating greens and chitlins and all that stuff. That has nothing to do with it. Because those people who passed on was 91, 102. They have lived a life, and they have taken care of themselves, you know, to a point. So my point is, I just want to help people take care of themselves that they can live the best life that they can live. And each year, every day come along, this is what I do. And then I say, instead of waiting for the government to give you a handout, and they've been stealing from you all along, doing what they want to do, how they want to live. And so my goal is, and this is into the future, don't get off of the track of helping people become self-reliant and self-determined to do what they do, what they want to do, instead of pitying and grieving over stuff you have no control over. Okay, that's it.
You think you off the line, but you are not off the line, Lulu. You are not off the line, because I'm definitely going to pick that on the part like it's a piece of chicken, and I'm right there in between the bone. Let me let you know.
And guess what? The marrow of the bone is what keeps it all going, so don't play around with the stuff.
Mo, let's get to the marrow. Let's get to the marrow of it all, okay? Because I see you like me in a way. You a realist. You know what I mean? Because people die. You know, we look at the statistics, goddamn it. The statistics will tell us every time you take a breath, just about somebody is no longer taking a breath. Let's just put it right in that term. We ain't even got to look at the numbers. We could just say simply and plain, every time somebody is taking a breath, somebody is taking their last breath, right? That has to be mind-blowing right there, to just say that, like, my God, I'm so grateful in this moment. Show yourself some gratitude and realize that every time I take a breath, somebody's no longer taking a breath. That puts your whole mind in a different perspective, where you don't have time to focus on not living. We have gotten so adept to focusing on living that we don't want to die. We are afraid of the unknown, because all of what we know is living life. Before you, when you opened your eyes and you came into this world, all you know is life. You don't know nothing about where you was before you had a brain to think. So the thought of going back to that it's traumatic. You understand me? So we need to talk about this shit right a minute. Wait a minute. Because here you go somebody from I'm point. Going back to work. Is grief necessary? Or do you mean to is it necessary?
That's really real. I mean, it's like, yeah, you're born here. As sure as you're born, you're going to die. And that's something. And that's why I said, when I thank God, because you know where you're going by the life you live. I can't put nobody in heaven. I can't put nobody in hell, but I can sure enough take responsibility for mine. And if I, God already told us in Jeremiah that he know the plans that he have for our life. That is so deep. And that's why I learned to live off of the positive aspect and the negative. I can't do anything about it because you can't make people change their mind. Some people breathe trauma every minute. And I also learned, I was in college, stay away from toxic people because they will make you toxic.
Yes, ma'am.
And so if I say anything to a person, I mean, it's like even if they're negative, I can say the positive and keep on going because it will make you crazy. And I tell you, I did get affected about in November. I wasn't using my messenger and my, you know, the issue with my oldest brother and his family not taking care of him. And he was here and he's back in Texas. One of the little granddaughters, I didn't know who she was, said some awful stuff about me. And I was typing and I read, I said, whoop, whoop. I got upset for about 20 minutes. And then I said, what? Some disrespectful little girl. And then I calmed down and I went back and it was 2019 that she sent that and said that all. I'm like, what's the big deal? I calmed down.
Oh, my God, today. My God, today. I want to come on, Lulu. Tell me why you didn't got me there. Because you didn't got the loss of your phone and you ain't paying the damn attention to it.
But, you know what? For me being from the old school, I would never let my child talk to an adult like that. Boy, I would have put a sock in their mouth in a minute. And I'm like, how could these people let her daughter talk like that? I mean, who told her that? Did I say, it don't matter. She can say what she wanted to say, but I had 20 minutes that if I could have got my act together. And then I said, oh, I'm like, then I knew it was one of my niece's daughters and their mom. I said, that's why I said, you've got to cut toxic people loose because they will make you toxic. And it didn't matter anymore. I mean, what you think about me does not matter as long as I treat you right. Yeah. So I can't carry that stuff. I can't hang on to hatred. I can't hang on to bitterness. I cannot do it because it will kill you. I had to learn this stuff because that outside, that stress, high blood pressure, all these other things, kidney. And when you've been through what I've been through, you got to say, whew, that's their opinion. And a fool in his opinion is soon parted. And I got another saying. I say, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say to me bounce off me and sticks to you.
My God today, Lulu. You know what? We sure miss you here on Black Sister Talk. You've been MIA and we just let you fly foot loose and fancy free and you just breathe on Black Sister Talk because I am over here like, really? I mean, I'm before I can even get to there, I'm still unpacking the first thing that you were talking about. I mean, let's really get back to that point of that perspective of let's picking up and keep moving, right? Because lot of us are told that there's a grieving process. And I can agree that that can exist in the same space that however the hell you decide to choose, you know, to deal with your grief exists too, because you just went right to acceptance. You know what I mean? And so that model wins because it says that it does not matter what order it is accomplished. And so it sounds like you might have prematurely got to acceptance. I don't know that was acceptance. I guess that's just
I'm going to tell
accept
you,
in reality.
Anything I could do for what my father said came true. My check was short. I couldn't blame anybody because he had told me what to do and why. And but the thing is that when I couldn't cry at his funeral and I was busy holding other people up, and I knew I had lived the right life and been a good daughter, the best I could be, I don't have anything to grieve over that. But the hardest part was I was listening to The Temptation, I'm Going to Miss You, My Buddy. What's the name? Was singing it. And I was laying in the bed and that song came on and I cried all night long. Mm-hmm. All night. And I seen the day that he passed and the stuff that went on. And he had told me to have the kids sign their names at the bottom of the paper and at the top so somebody could steal. And I'm like, wow. You know, and I did. And I stopped before the door. You didn't sign your paper. He said, bam, right there. My father died at 2:30. I was letting him out every time he died. And he had told me how the kids do that. I have truth. And it's like I have truth when I look at it because I have a sister whose husband is dead now for what? Almost 8 years. Guess what? She's still putting this picture on there. She's got 100,000 of this things going on in her body and can this and can that. I'm so sick that can't go. I'm tired of hearing. I'm tired of seeing the face.
My God, today. Damn.
I can't do that. But it's like, you know what? It's like you can't bring him back. You can't do anything. And see, people want to do the impossible. And I bet you if he started walking up there, probably holler and die real quick if they seen them dead people come walking back up here.
Okay, anyway. Now. Okay.
But when, get back to the real.
Y'all saw another cup on the last show, don't you? And this how y'all act on the first day of Kwanzaa. You know, this how y'all acting on the first day of Kwanzaa. Come on, community. Come on, community.
And by the way, for Kwanzaa, in a naming ceremony about 10 years ago, my name is Kemet Serengeti. Kemet, the black earth of Egypt, and the Serengeti River is the longest river, meaning mother of all. Okay?
Yes, come on with the name. That's
my God, today, let me let you know, you know we're going to have to talk about the ceremony that you participated in to get that name and honor. And yeah, I would like to know more about that because that sounds very nice. And I need my name. I'm going to have to come up with my own name. They might tell me, this your name. I'm going to say, can we bless this name, though?
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Cause, well, I was named because when I left my husband, I left out there with two kids and ended up with eight. Where these kids come from? I had to be a mother to all these kids to help them get their lives straight. I don't know how it happened, but that's what I had to do. And that's what they knew me as, and they named my two sons as well. I can't remember their names. I ain't trying to either. But yeah, and that's my purpose. And I'm a teacher, so it all fits that way.
Mm-hmm. I hear that, Lulu. I hear that. So I guess this is a question I'm opposed to everyone that is in the discussion right now. Do you feel that grief is necessary process to heal? Do you feel that that must happen?
I think Lulu kind of nailed it on the head. I think everybody's going to have their own process with how they choose to grieve. But I think the main thing about grieving is really the acceptance piece, you know. So, right, if Lulu could just go straight to the acceptance, then I think that's her process of grieving. You know, other people, I think, it's a good question too, but I think overall, I think the acceptance has to occur for you to be able to know how to move on. So if something is something that's just too heavy in your heart where you really with the kid and accept or even deny they're not even there. You know what I'm saying? And deny and even bargain the whole steps to it. I think overall, you know, if you never really got to the acceptance, I think you're never going to be able to kind of move past that step. You know, it's like trauma. You know, if you don't really understand your trauma, then how you going to know how to move forward? You know, it's, I think it's the same thing with grief, you know. And everybody got their own way. Now, my thing about that question is I think sometimes, though, we got to learn how to move these steps forward. You know what I'm saying, though, in our own way. And we can't stay in these steps just to be comfortable. And we should move in our own time, you know. So I would say with the grieving, I mean, it's different in that. But I do think that sometimes, though, when we go into denial a lot, we don't want to move to the next step because we want to stay comfortable and stay in there. So I would say over time, it should be, it's somewhere in a step where they'd be like, okay, then we got to go with, you know, accepting and stuff like that. But I don't want to tell anybody, you know, when they should grieve about anything or not. But on my personal end, I do agree that in order for us to truly heal and become who we are, you know, even after the grief, even after the trauma, I mean, we won't be able to move forward. We don't know how we even move past what even occurred.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know you guys are listening and you might think, I know you over there, Joshamaine and Miss Yvonne, like how many times you gonna ask that question? See, I'm gonna ask that question as many times as it takes for us to get real about it, okay? That's why I'm gonna keep asking it, because what I'm gonna point out right now is this. We're listening to the same thing right now. And what Lulu said is, this is what I needed to do to keep going. But there was no processing of that. You was at a whole funeral and was not able to even process. It was not until you had a connection. See, what music do is this. Sometimes you can hear a tune that could just say everything that your heart is not able to communicate, but somehow within you, that song is now pulling on everything that you felt. Okay, this is what I'm talking about, feeling versus thinking. See, I got y'all all riled up laughing and jokety joke joke, but it's time to get serious now. Feeling versus thinking. See, when you're stuck in thinking, you stuck in survival mode. Okay, just like when you watching a scary movie and you see your main character, you're like, don't do that. Hurry up and get that stuff and keep moving. And they be doing stuff and they be pissing you off and you be like, why are you doing that? That's just how this is right here. The same way. Why are you doing that? You can't do that right now. You gotta win. You gotta keep moving. And so what I'm saying to you is mind over matter. All right, the mind said, I got to go to work. I got to pay my bills. I can't deal with this right now because I already was told what was going to happen, and it will be so. Because what we know in the Black community is we lose people and we go to funeral after funeral after funeral after funeral. I mean, you might as well call my mama Weeping Wanda when I was growing up. I mean, I have been to over 55 funerals before I was even 7 years old. You understand me? Death had become a part of life as I knew it, in something that is a ceremony that happens when people go. I was not even connected to the feeling. It was just the thinking. So when we sit here and we talk about grieving, healing, moving on, we ain't even processing. Mm-hmm. So the healing, the grieving is ongoing. We are not even processing. We are still being numb to things that are happening around us. And it's not until something hits us out of nowhere. It could be a song. It could be a smell. It could be a meal. It could be any kind of memory or anything that tap on your senses that could take you back there. You know what that is? That's love. That's the heart. That's the heart feeling. That's the heart overpowering your mind system. Everything you thinking, emotions is coming now. You can't deal with that. And see, we have those blockages within us that keep us from dealing with the feeling, because our survival cells are like, no, I can't show emotion. Emotion is weakness. If I show weakness, what am I going to look like? You go through this whole process. Oh, this ain't the time or the place for that. I got to be strong for them. When are you being strong for yourself? And I'm not saying everybody got to cry.
Right.
Because everybody don't cry. But what I'm saying is you got to learn how to face what you are feeling. Not what you are thinking, but what you are feeling. Ms. Yvonne, you had something you wanted to add to that?
I did. Because
I know you. I know you over there just
Well, you know, all I can do is really go from personal experience. And I've had a lot of situations where I happen to be there when people passed away from natural causes. And seeing the process of death gave me a different perspective on grief. And the reason why is because I looked at the person, I looked at their grief as they're disconnecting from the world that they are about to leave with all their loved ones. And I think that for some people, grief can be much more deeper if they happen to be feelers and not solely thinkers, or not, they don't have a balance of feeling and thinking. I'm one of those types of people that I can think, but I feel mostly. And so with that being said, when it comes to grief, it is something that I would love to just be able to just accept. But with being a feeler, you feel everybody else's emotions as well. And you take in so much. It's a collective experience, especially in the Black community. You know, a lot of times, being honest, when something happens, how many people are like, as soon as something happens, the first person they think of is the closest person to the person that passed away. And then you grieve off of that. Oh my God, so-and-so just lost her husband. Oh my God, so-and-so just lost her son. And then you thinking about his or her kids, the other deceased person, how they're feeling. So we collectively grieve as people, but then we also grieve individually. And I think that grief has a frequency that it transfers like amongst other people, because it's like you can feel it. And if you are not able to feel that, to me, that's almost like a defense to guard yourself, because it's almost like you're not able to handle all of it. I know people who cannot handle it at that moment because it's too many people. They're feeling too much. It's an overload. And then when they go home and they get with themselves at night or days later, the shock wears off. You know, and it's just so many different things that happen. So as I'm listening, I'm kind of taking in what Lulu said. And I'm like, I think that that's really deep, because it seems like to me, it's almost like a shock thing that happens, even from the point of when a person is dying. That's one thing I always say. That's a whole nother grieving process. When you love somebody and they're dying, ing meaning continual, their life is still here. But when they actually die and it's final and there's a period at the end and there's no continuation of that life, that's a whole nother grieving process. And that's a whole nother. That's a whole nother realization. And then the acceptance from that moment on has to be every single thought after you find out this person has passed away. See, I'm a very mechanical person.
Let me hop in real quick, Ashley. We're at the top of the hour. Let me let you know, Ms. Divine, we got to put this on pause for just a minute. We'll be right back. Okay. Back at the top. My God, today.
Back in elementary, thrived on misery, left me alone, I grew up amongst a dying breed, inside my mind couldn't find a place to rest, until I got that thug life tatted on my chest, tell me can you feel me, I'm not living in the past, you wanna last, be the first to blast, remember Cato, no longer witness, see the seats, calling the sirens, seen them murdered in the streets, now rest in peace, is there heaven for a G, remember me, so many homies in the cemetery, shed so many tears. I suffered through the years and shed so many tears. Lord, I lost so many peers and shed so many tears. Now that I'm struggling in this business by any means, label me greedy, getting green, but seldom seen. And fuck the world cause I'm cursed, I'm having visions of leaving here in the hurts. God, can you feel? Take me away from all the pressure and all the pain. Show me some happiness again. I'm going blind, I spend my time in the cell. Ain't living well, I know my destiny is hell. What did I fail? My life is in denial, and when I die, baptized in eternal fire, shed so many tears. Lord, I suffered through the years and shed so many tears. Lord, I lost so many tears and shed so many tears. Now I'm lost and I'm weary, so many tears. I'm suicidal, so don't stand near me. My every move is a calculated step to bring me closer to embracing early death. Now there's nothing left. There was no mercy on the streets, I couldn't rest. I'm barely standing, about to go to pieces, screaming peace. And though my soul was deleted, I couldn't see it. I had my mind full of demons trying to break free. They planted seeds and they hatched, sparking the flame inside my brain like a match. Such a dirty game. No memories, just the misery. Painting a picture of my enemies killing me in my sleep. Will I survive till the morning to see the sun? Please, Lord, forgive me for my sins, cause here I come. Lord, I suffered through the years and shed so many tears. God, I lost so many peers, and Lord knows I tried. Been a witness to homicides and drive-bys, taking lives, little kids die. Wonder why as I walk by, broken-hearted as I glance at the truck line, getting high. This ain't the life for me, I wanna change, but ain't no future right for me, stuck in the game. I'm trapped inside a maze, see this Tangeray influence me to getting crazy, disillusioned lately. I've been really wanting babies, so I can see a part of me that wasn't always shady. Don't trust my lady, cause she's a product of this poison. I'm hearing noises, think she's fucking on my boys, can't take no more. I'm falling to the floor, begging for the Lord to let me into heaven's door. Shed so many tears. Lord, I've lost so many years and shed so many tears.
Shit, man, it is what it is, man. From now on, I look my demons in the face, nigga, the G-Way.
Yeah.
Hey, big boy, tell these niggas it's whatever with me.
Start it.
Tell my pops I say what's happening. Yeah, niggas ain't fucking with me, nigga. Ain't nothing you could do with me, nigga. I'm already broken in half, nigga. I'm already empty, nigga. At the same time, I'm still full of love, nigga. My heart's still pure. I can't even explain this shit, nigga. It's Kurt. Long Lil' G.
Let's go. Started from the bottom, me an eight-figure nigga. Got a cramp on my back. I was carrying ungrateful bitches and niggas. I got it though. Cut the light on and I see a soul full of pain when I look in the mirror. I'm broken now. Ain't believing this shit. I trade anything just to see big brother get up. How you even mean to do this? Fuck it, I'm in my feelings. I wanna kill something 2G.
Oh, yeah.
Had to call my Dominican boo thing. She called me down, I'm on FaceTime with movie. Saw me down on that page, niggas goofy. Knock them down, pay for brains like I'm Boosie. Hate that I gave them time that I could gave my brother. Shame how they turn around and do me. It's a shame how they turn around and flip. A shame how this money gon' turn into murder. A shame how they ran out and spent. Couple more on my list and we still gotta burn them. A shame how I still ain't forget. The nerve of you ungrateful motherfuckers to act like I ain't the trillest. And to do me like that, but you gon' feel it. Started from the bottom, me an eight-figure nigga. Got a crap on my back, I was carrying ungrateful bitches and niggas. I got it though, cut the light on and I see a soul full of pain when I look in the mirror. I'm broken now, ain't believing this shit. I
trade anything just to see big brother get up. How you even mean to do this? Started from the bottom, me an eight figure nigga. Got a crimp on my back, I was carrying ungrateful bitches and niggas. I got it though, cut the light on and I see a soul full of pain when I look in the mirror. I'm broken now, ain't believing this shit. I trade anything just to see big brother get up. How you even mean to do this?
I was carrying ungrateful niggas and bitches. Heard you be telling niggas I got up and left you in the trenches. What? And it's crazy now, niggas I put on once upon a time on my hit list. I done got so fucking rich, it be damaging my friendships. Most of these niggas ungrateful, you get some money, they hate you. I try to put you on money, but you let this money shit make you. You ain't never get a nigga 20,000 white pop, never hear it say. That's why I be on angles. Get handouts at the goal line, fumbling, still trying to blame.
Started from the bottom, me an eight figure nigga. Got a crimp on my back, I was carrying ungrateful bitches and niggas. I got it though, cut the light on and I see a soul full of pain when I look in the mirror. I'm broken now, ain't believing this shit. I trade anything just to see big brother get up. How you even mean to do this?
Here's your time for an awakening media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambom and Sister Nataki Kambom. 9 p.m. till 10 p.m., Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones, co-host Oniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturdays, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out, get informed, and get
informed. You are listening to Black Sister Talk, So You Can Breathe, with host LaWanda Chambers. Black Sister Talk radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at whereyoucanbreathe@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. You can go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Hello, hello, everybody. Yes, let's get back, right back into it. And again, let me remind you guys, today is the first day of Kwanzaa, and the first principle is Umoja, unity, maintaining unity as a family, a community, and race of people. Come on now.
Come on.
Let's keep that up. And not just exercise that on today, but let's continue to exercise that throughout life. Okay. So let's get back into this discussion. Mr. Vine, I hate that we had to cut you up and let you not get what you were saying off your chest, because we want you to breathe on that. And I must say, you are so right. So go ahead and lead us back into the discussion. And we got Miss Lainey on the line. She can chime in as well. Yes,
Miss Lainey. Hey, Miss Lainey. Miss Lainey, you miss Lulu cutting up, but you know. You know.
Good afternoon, you guys. I know Lulu got it in. I know she did.
Good afternoon. Always. We miss her.
Yes.
But go ahead, Ms. Divine. Go ahead and check it, Ms. Divine. Go ahead and go in on the right quick. Let them know. What's up?
Well, you know, I can't really jump back on that right now because, you know, I got to jump in and jump out. But I would love to hear what Ms. Lainey has to say. How you doing, Ms. Lainey?
Okay. Sorry that I'm late today. I was enjoying to have a free moment, so you know how that can be.
Enjoyable. That's how we can be. Okay.
So we're talking about grief today, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the individual the individual that's going through the process really needs to sit and dissect it and see how, you know, their grieving process is going and, you know, what available resources they have or people that they can reach out to that they trust and can connect with, you know, to help going through that process. Because I think for all of, you know, our listeners and whatever, grieving is just not about losing a loved one, you know, through death or whatever. We've lost many people, you know, that we've known in this COVID situation. We've lost people that either directly hit close to home or a friend of a friend, a colleague of a colleague, you know. So we all grieve on different levels. But some people look at it as, you know, they're not grieving, you know, they're the stronger person no matter what is going on. And they don't just have to necessarily involve them. It could be, you know, it could be a domestic violence situation. Because that's another traumatic event where people go through grief. Because, you know, God forbid, you know somebody that they've been with someone for a decade and all of a sudden he decides that, you know, she Mike Tyson and he Holyfield. And, you know, so how do you get back from that? Because she or he, because domestic violence go both ways, are going to play that whole episode like, you know, what could I have done differently? Why did this happen? So they're going through a traumatic experience over and over again. That's a form of grief, too. So how do we help them bridge that gap to get the help that they need in order to you know, become that whole person again after the event? You get what I'm saying? So it's a huge topic, and it's very well needed. And this day and age, you know, with us being in a pandemic, we've all experienced it. We've all know what it looks like. So how do we help each other get through it?
That's right. People need people. And so that gets me to that internalization, what happens when people go through the grieving process. Sometimes they shut down. They become more withdrawn. And so I think you hit the nail on the head by saying that. Let's talk about it. Let's engage more when we're grieving. Let's say how we feeling instead of going with the flow. That's what that's all about, going with the flow. You more focused on keeping faith or dealing with your emotions? Which is more important than you?
Now, that's deep right there.
You know, this Lucille, you know, I totally agree. Everybody is different because I was a victim of domestic violence. Fear, once again, someone controlling your life. But I remember when I really wanted to die, and I wanted to get out of here so I wouldn't have to deal with it, because I came out of my parents' house into a marriage, which they told me not to. But you got to
You got to have some resilience yourself, because nobody can say that right word. You got to grab it out of the inside of you. And you have to make a decision, because what I found is that everything that I've heard was true, but I had to understand it, because I read a sign in the courtroom one time, he'll get you again. I didn't believe that. I believed that I could change somebody, and you really can't. You got to start figuring out survival for yourself. And some people really do like to lean on that, to have that support of someone, and they can't really give it all to them, and they keep grieving, they keep crying. And over the years, I've seen my weak point, and I had to say, is this what you want? Are you a punching bag? Yes or no? Because we're all individuals, and we all grieve. And I mean, this was 30 years. When I say that I'm this happy person now, and I'm dealing with life, and I can go on, my mind, my soul, my whole body is essence to that, because if you got one bit of pity there, you that pity is going to take over your life and control you, and you're going to constantly look for someone to lift you out of it. And so my thing, I totally agree. At this age, I'll be 73 next month, and I can look back over the steps of my life. And it was like when I had to build this resilience up inside of me that I'm just not going to take it no more. But I'm going to be a kind person, and everybody don't have to pay for what you went through, because you made a choice. I made a choice. There's consequences for the choices that you make. And that's why when we talk about grieving and all the different things and all the depths, if I look at TV and just look at those numbers of how many people died, and they're telling us that black people die first, more, and I don't see all black people assessing, what's wrong with them? Everybody's dying. It's not just us. So I agree with her, and everybody's different in how they grieve, and if you really want to be a friend to someone, just support them in the best way that you can, but you cannot buy into that hurt that they're suffering, because they have to make a decision. How long do they want to suffer? Was that Murphy's Law about how a person grieves? Our courts will put people in jail if they've done something. They say, we don't feel you have any remorse. The people are telling you how you need to feel and live, and that's not the truth. But anyway, I just wanted to chime in on that. I like what you said.
Go on, Ms. Lulu, go in. I mean, I think if anything, I believe that a lot of go in, please do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're grieving. I think a lot of times, I believe the biggest thing I get out of just hearing my own stories and my own experience, that sometimes we just don't want to adapt to change. I think change is like kryptonite to the black community. You know, it's like we just don't like change. Like, whatever it is, we just not going for it. And we would lie to ourselves and really accept things for who we think they are, just because we want to live in this reality of being comfortable, you know, and never really realizing that there's other levels of life. It's like we want to always have like a snapshot, or you know, or a photoshop of one fragment of our life, and just think that our life just don't progress. You know what I mean? And I think that's probably the hardest thing. I think everybody just learn how to go with the flow. You know, learn how to flow with life instead of you trying to go against it. You know what I mean? So it's like, how much do we need to grieve, and how much are we making grieving more hard than what it needs to be? You know what I'm saying, though? Because if we really had the faith and the acceptance of what was, then we'll stop resisting so hard.
Right.
You know, I'm over here listening to y'all talk. I hear y'all calling me and stuff. Listen, I can hear you loud and clear. Lima Chop. So let me let you know. I think a lot of the times people are too focused on what this process should look like, instead of just focusing on the moment of feeling. Again, I go back to the feelings. I go back to saying things like, what are you holding on to anger for? What are you holding on to these feelings? Why are you doing this?
you know, when you say that, it's like you can't trust feelings. It's like emotional torture tissue. Because I tell people, if you drop a 2-ton brick on your foot, your feelings going to be in your foot. What you was thinking about is gone. I think society have put too much emphasis on how they think a person should be. And people look for them for that guidance, but it's within you. You were made whole. You got everything you need, emotions and feelings, okay, but you can't trust them. You got to have something that's solid that you can put yourself into. And we have raised a generation of people, of needy people. When we talk about our society can't change, I was listening to two young men, 38 and 43, last night. And I said, wow, I heard this conversation before several times. So our generation has passed on, but they never passed on the part that will help them all get out of trouble, the economic survival of their own family, being able to provide for what they need and want. That mm-hmm. you was born, and like in the Bible said, if you don't work, you don't eat. But yet we feed people and they look for it every day. Our hearts go out to them.
My God, today.
And so it's a learned behavior, and so is grieving how people say. And some people, I remember when everybody was talking, my first pastor here in Milwaukee that came from Mississippi with my family now, when he passed away, they were married for 63 years. She was walking. She was grieving so hard. She dropped dead at Mayfair at the mall. And they had a funeral. See, you've got to talk about, she didn't want to, her husband was gone. And they had 63 years together. And so people actually become very ill with all that deep emotional grieving that they do and no way out.
I hear you, Lulu. And that's why I'm asking you. That's why I'm asking you this question. Because you said, basically, emotions, you can't trust your emotions. Yet some people can't cry. Some people can't feel. Some people are numb.
You're gonna be numb. When my father passed away, I knew he was dying. So the process, I just kept hope that he'd be here long enough to keep going. That was me. Everybody else, you're not being real, Lucille. No, I enjoyed him up to the last minute. Why go crazy? You're not gonna see him again. But he is with me. My mother's with me. I feel their spirit. When I say I feel their spirit, they raise me. How I respond to things, how I deal with things. And it's like getting to know who you are. And so when I tell you, you can't trust emotions. I did a big thing of it at UWM. And we had to talk about it because the emotions, when somebody hurt you, and you don't like it, you want to get even. But then if you get caught, you feel bad. And half the time, so when you're talking about the emotional upset that people have, and it's stuff that they won't talk about. When I was counseling, I would ask the person, what is the one thing that you have done that you will not share with anybody? That's that emotion. That's that pain deep down inside. Something awful. There's stuff. And you holding on to it, and it's growing. It's getting bigger and bigger inside of you because it's an awful thing. I'm talking about low down dirty.
Uh-huh.
Telling people, and then people are you hold on, and then you become mean and you snap people out every chance you get or something to keep them from getting close to you because you've been injured. It's a lot of that. But then they're the ones who have to go back and pick up. What is it that I'm too ashamed to tell that's eating me up? Because shame is also a tool that rips people apart.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have to agree with you, Lulu.
Yeah. So my whole thing is that there's no real answer, but if you get an opportunity and someone's in front of you and they're grieving, like just like my sister, and I had to say it, but I knew it would hurt her feelings, but I had to say it in a way that she'd take on reality because it's ruining your children. And they're not even, that's not even their father. He was a stepfather. You look at where your children are and you got a job to do. And now those kids, I mean, she suffers a lot. And people, my sons bought me a stove for Christmas. They said, Mama, you need it. You deserve it. And said, oh, you are so blessed to have that. But I was real with my kids about reality. I'm not trying to lie to them. You do something, you got to pay for it. You got to say you're sorry. Because when you got a whole lot of unforgiveness and you're the right person, you got a lot of illness and a lot of emotions that's running away with you.
Well, let's breathe on that, Lulu, because everything you're saying is just what I'm saying. I think you're just going the inverse of, you know, we're going to have a sidebar after the show anyway, so we're going to have to talk a little bit more. Meet me in the Zoom room at the show for Black Sister Talk, take two. Because what I'm saying here to you is that everything you're saying is describing a process, inviting the hurt forward, okay? Because what I'm saying is that it sounds like what we would say is denial. You know, everybody that's dealing with this COVID, we all having some sort of an adjustment to just getting day by day things done. I mean, there was some hunting and gathering at the beginning of it, and now people are a little bit cool about the toilet paper. You can get that at the store now. You can get some Lysol wipes. You can get some spray. People are like, oh man, we used to COVID-19 right now. I mean, this ain't the kind of thing you want to get used to, but it's a sense of normalcy in trying to reshape your life as you knew it to fit the circumstances of right now. And so what I'm saying is inviting the hurt forward, because some people like, I ain't leaving my damn house, I'm not going to work, I'm not doing nothing. And then you got some people who like, okay, I still gotta make money, okay, if I get sick I might gonna die, okay, what's the statistics, okay, you know, they're challenging the situation in a way that's helping them to make sense of it. And so they're avoiding cognitive dissonance at any rate right now. You know, they're trying to avoid the hurt of this COVID-19. Because if I didn't want to get in my tub and cry like a baby because I couldn't do some things, we're looking at selfishness. Okay, let's look at what it is. Let's look at what that inviting the hurt forward is, because that comes with admitting some things to yourself. I have been selfish. I have been worried about things that I shouldn't probably have been worried about. I needed to be focusing on a need right now, not a want right now. You know, there are people out here who don't have things you don't have right now. So inviting that hurt forward, acknowledging those things, emotions are very much a part of them. And yes, I agree. They are not something that we want to hold on to. Emotions are temporary. Hell, I think most of the day I was spending indifference, but somebody else might say every moment of my day I'm happy because I'm alive. Okay? We're looking at perspectives here. We're looking at the way you're going to think, because Lulu, the way you got to pick up and keep moving. I got to agree. That's all you can do. You know what I mean? What can you do? You can't bring it back. You understand where your control lies. Everybody else got this control issue. And then they think, okay, this person dead and gone, and they'll right away say something about what that person has done for them or could have been doing for them, versus looking at the life that person had and maybe them just wanting to enjoy whatever they called enjoy it. You know, we're looking at selfishness. We're looking at a lot of things when we're talking about grief and just getting down to the very layers of self and what that means to you, not just you, Lulu, but you in general as people listening right now, and understanding that we must invite the hurt forward. We must acknowledge the hurt, and then the process can begin. Lulu, you are so right. You got to tell them. What's that thing you don't want nobody to know about? You hit the nail right on the head, because I want to know that thing. I'm the person that you're going to be talking to in confidence. I need to know.
But you know what? If they realize it and they just go to God and ask him for forgiveness, other people don't have to know, because a lot of people judge you by things you know, and then that drives you into a deeper emotional turmoil and hide out and just become bitter. So it's like you don't have to, because if you notice psychiatrists, when they talk to people, people explore their deepest, deepest feelings, and they don't give them any answers.
No, I ain't got to.
And I'm saying,
I wouldn't want to. Cause listen, and this you is what I'm saying.
But that's where people as individuals have to. I'm totally in agreement because I've had to snap a lot of people back into reality. And when I was counseling, I mean, this kid, Preston, he ain't no kid. He was like 30. But every time something went wrong in his life, he would blame it on his dead mother. And I was going, this counselor who was over me, he said, he was in the meeting, he said, quit dragging your dead mother around with you. And he said, whoop, because it was a way of manipulating people to feel sorry for him. So my sister was
reality therapy.
Yes. My sister husband was on crack and he was just taking everything. And she called me and he had her at bay with a knife upstairs. And I came up the stairs and I asked him this with a loud voice, what are you doing? And my other sisters, they were at her house in a living room. And he started that sad story about his mother. And like I said, everybody's supposed to pay. And then it came to me. I said, stop dragging your dead mama around with you. Put that crack in your mouth. You stole from your wife. And my sister, oh, how can she say such an evil thing? And it's not evil. He's the one evil to beat people up, scare them half to death with a knife because he wants a taste of crack.
My God, today, let's breathe in. Let's breathe in. Let's just breathe on that. Because that couldn't be no further from the truth. And I think that sometimes people, like I said earlier, people are caught up in this idea of what grief should look like. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, I got to be sad. I got to cry. Pastor Andrew said reality therapy is the cure for 2020. Come holler at Miss Wanda, your therapist, favorite therapist, because I got I'll let you know that right now. I read you to the right direction. And you know the answers anyways. And I got to tell you that people, everyone on the line, they had the answers to what they're dealing with. And it's just going to take a process of dealing with the truth from within you. I ain't going to lie to you. That's one thing I'm not going to do is hinder you from your healing. And so I want you to recognize that you have to learn to create what you want instead of being stuck in what you didn't have. You got to learn how to move forward. You got to learn how to face what you are really angry about. You have to really face what you have lost and be honest about that loss and grieve that loss. What could have been? Look at that. You got to look at all the possibilities and the pros and the cons of these things, because otherwise you're going to be harboring this stuff around. It's going to be therapeutic. I'd also encourage you to go ahead and just breathe and do just that. Because if you're not breathing, you're not able to think. I'm telling you. You're too impulsive. You're too impulsive when you ain't breathing. You're like, what's a... And then I got to do this. And then I got to do this. And then you ain't doing nothing because you ain't breathing and you ain't moving. And you're dropping stuff and you're losing and you're forgetting it, and it's just chaos. So I got to encourage you, when stuff is just really feeling overwhelming, it's okay to just take a moment for yourself. Show your body some gratitude. Lulu been hitting on that body, yada, 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 yada. And all I got to say is get your Zuma somewhere at a website near you. Look it up. Google it. That's all I'm saying. Because you're going to have to learn how to take care of your temple. You know, this is your shell. And your spirit has to live in it. And I want my shell to be nice. Okay, got to tell you that. But let me let you know, don't be superficial, because God don't like ugly and wasn't too crazy about pretty. So if you just a plain Jane, you all right with him.
I'm done. I mean, but you know what? I think the thing on my end, though, is like, when Lula, I hear everything, Lula on point. You know, she always snapping. I just think on my end, how I see it is that we just can't override the emotional experience, because just as much as, you know, I've been working in mental health, just look at my experience, a lot of times, though, we don't know how to process emotions to even say, that we are even doing it. Most of the time, though, these experiences are being felt on a personal level of how we feel, you know. And I think sometimes we really don't process emotions to even understand on a higher level. That's the intuition. Right. That's the telepathy. And why would we even have to grieve if we already connected to them in other worlds? We can connect with them on physical level. We can only connect on the emotional level. That's why when we hear the songs, we get the memory back. That's why sometimes we have a conversation of just having clairsentience, you know, clairvoyance, all these things that when people be saying we can touch a mug and remember somebody, we always do that type of stuff. We just don't call it that. You know what I'm saying? When we want to have souvenirs for people that have passed, we do that. You know what I'm saying? For a reason. So it's like, I think sometimes we don't really put enough emphasis on the emotional experience of grieving, and that's why we always shoot it back to the head, because the head can always outthink the experience. You know, the head can always find a way to make it look better than what it is. You know what I mean? We got the ego start kicking in, that defense mechanism start kicking in, and then you thinking you got it all handled, and then you giving everybody else terror. You know what I mean? And I think that if we really don't sit at the heart, you know, the heart is where all is centered at. We don't make heart-centered decisions, you know what I mean? And that heart center is what leads to that emotional experience. Now, you are right. I do believe that we have to have a balance there, you know, where we are not going overkill and we just in a whole nother reality and we can't get to rationality. I'm not saying that either. But I know for a fact, though, that and we don't want to sit back and think about emotions, especially Black people, though, because we never had the time to breathe. To even grieve anything, you know what I'm saying, though? So we don't even process it on a day-to-day. And I think what you, Lulu, is that I love you so much because you are older. So you able to come with this, you know, self-actualization about yourself to know this is what it is, you know what I mean? Because, you know, but we all got our own journey, and I'm younger. So, I mean, I'm looking at my generation like we don't process emotions, you know? We think crying is processing it. We don't sit back and think about emotional intelligence. We don't think about higher levels of emotionality. We just only look at just, oh, somebody crying, they sad because they didn't get what they wanted. You know what I mean? And that might be true. And I think another thing, too, is that we don't sit back and think about the people that have left us behind and us having that emotional experience over people that have left us and us feeling that direct attachment that we can't let go of. We have to honor that, too. You know what I'm saying, though? Because that still comes from a place emotionally that we are not really processing it. We're just sitting back thinking, like, why the person can't get over that death of loved ones? We don't know what they're seeing. We don't know what they're hearing. We don't know any of that. You know what I'm saying, though? So we don't even look at it from a parapsychological perspective. But that really comes from an emotional and a mental plane. It all goes together. You know what I mean? But we got to know how to mix it all together. Even in the mental plane is how we really connect. But the emotional is like that soul stuff. I'm telling you, it's like that soul work.
Yeah, it is.
Come on.
That's what really needs to be looked at. Because if we're going to be honest here, I'm so happy that you said that, Josh, because when it comes to our bodies, I think that we all need a reminder, and I may just have to, you know, remind everybody that we are human second, not first, because outside of these bodies, there exists a spirit, or what some people may say a soul. It's called chi. So if we have an existence in another realm, and we also have bodies in this realm, I cannot totally discount my emotions or that part of me that's connected to that realm just so I could survive and move on in this one. And I understand I think that the society that we live in is beyond harsh. Because they tell you, number one, they tell you that you can have time for bereavement as if you just should not already be allowed that. They tell you how much time you should have or can have, as if to say, by this time, you should be able to come back and do what we want you to do. We don't care about you losing somebody. The society that we live in general is definitely not of an empathetic society. It is a society that has been created, in my humble opinion, by psychopaths. Because in every area of our lives, somebody is dominating us and not allowing us to have our own choices. And when it comes to how we even experience our own emotions, we have time limits on them. And as time limits were put on us, we then put them on other people, which basically perpetuated the whole non-empathetic culture that we live in. Because they said when I was hurting that I should get over it. So now that I have taken the get over it pill or move on pill, and now I see you hurting, I want you to take this pill too, because you making me uncomfortable with your shit. Because it's bringing up when they made me take this pill. And you taking too long. And so now I need you to shut up, because now it's bothering me. Because see, when I was grieving my innocence, anybody I came around who took that get over it pill, when I was in my grief stage, tried to give me the pill, I wasn't going. And I got my healing because I wasn't going for that get over it. I wasn't going for that. I don't want to hear that. I wasn't going for that. How many times you going to tell this? I'm going to tell her however many times I need to tell her until I feel like I'm better. Because that's what I need to do. Because I'm self-led on the inside, self-directed. And so once again, I think that we forgot our divinity within. And we just continue to just go on after we were colonized to just be robots. We're not robots, though. And we were intuitive feelers way more than we were intellectualized thinkers. Because intellectualization, to me, comes from, let me just not go there. Because
if we gonna talk about it now, we're gonna definitely go there, because I'm just sitting here thinking as you're speaking, and I just want all our everybody here on this platform, we all respect each other religions. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm gonna say is spirituality is an instinct and can live in the same space as religion. So when we talk about spirituality, I'm not discounting you and saying you can't be a part of the club, but I am saying that spirituality does not mean that you are religious as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like saying I'm trying to work somewhere where I gotta do something, but nothing at all. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Devine, go ahead and take them there, because this is the truth. Let's get it.
Okay. So the truth is, when I looked up, because you know, I knew something had to be going on with the whole intuitive thing, the whole empathic thing. And I said, okay, let's figure out what's going on here. And since nobody else outside of me would tell me the truth, I have to go within to get the truth, because everybody outside of me is man, human, just like I am. But I know that I'm connected to a source internally that's not human. So I trust that, because it's never led me wrong more than I trust humans who lie right in front of my face. So I'm just going to put that out there. Now, when it comes to intellectualization, if that's a word, but you know what I'm trying to say. If we are spirits, if we are energy, and we are feelers, and that's how we once communicated. We once communicated with our minds, not with our mouths, because this English language is the newest language. It's one of the youngest, I believe. So the whole thing that I'm trying to say is this. When it comes to intellectualizing things, I believe that that's a lot of where we went wrong at. We didn't have a choice, but I'm just saying, when we went from feeling to thinking, that's kind of what the problem is, because we don't intuitively feel through anything, because the realm that we live in is not just material. It's also another dimension that we exist in another form. So why just live as a human in this dimension and only think, knowing that we have another side to us that also feels, that is way more accurate than what the man has created for this dimension? Y'all know I'll be going off, and I know that probably don't make no sense, so I'm just going to be quiet. But we need to get back to empathy. We need to get back to feeling, because that has been the problem thus far. We don't even feel in our own communities for each other, which is why there is a lack of unity in the community.
Let's go. Let's go.
Because we don't feel for each other.
It's not that don't make sense. It's just let's break that down. And that's what you've just done to express your understanding of the concept. So to just look at that and understand that feeling definitely play a role in this process, and it must be acknowledged. It must be acknowledged because your feelings go right into your intuition. Your feelings get to hurting when you don't acknowledge it and you have your thoughts in your head. Nobody don't know what's going on in your head, but you sitting there with those thoughts in your head and you got that facade up and you're not dealing with self. And so you're doing things that distract you. You're doing vices. You're doing whatever you need to do to get through. And with that being said, it's saying I'm hurting, but I don't want to deal with it. I'd rather hurt and feel good in this way than feel good just for the sake of feeling good and moving on with a situation. I'm not telling you got to move on today, but I'm saying we have to feel. We have to acknowledge that feeling. We have to acknowledge how those feelings carry our spirit. Everything that has been said on this line is in great connection. You know, all of this feeling connects to the body relationship. And when your feelings are not dealt with, you over here creating stress in your body. What is that? Number one thing for us African Americans. Stress is the number one killer of us. You know, and we have to acknowledge that. We have to acknowledge that we have not been dealing with our issues. Why do you think that blood pressure is going up? Why do you think you feel sick when you get up in the morning? Why do you think you got that damn omeprazole formula with the metformin and the lisinopril and the atorvastatin combination? Why do you think you got them four pills? You know what I'm saying? Why do you think you got the gout? Why do you think you got these things? I'm going to tell you why. Because you ain't dealing with the stuff you need to be dealing with the way you need to be dealing with it. And so we want to learn how to deal with things in a way where we acknowledge them. And like you said, if I got to say it 500 million times for me to deal with it, then so be it. Give me the space and just listen to me while I say it over and over again, because my brain needs to align with what my mouth is saying. I have to hear.
Exactly.
I am still processing, and processing don't have no set agenda. Processing is going to take as long as processing going to take. You know that. It's inevitable. And so what I'm saying to you today is we ain't reaching for acceptance. We're reaching for processing today so that we begin to heal, because this is too much to handle in one day and say we're at acceptance. Let's go to step one, processing and acknowledging, okay? Because the spirit lives on. And if you're not dealing with your spirit here, do you think you're going to have a healthy spirit or a depleted spirit at the end of this journey? You know, that's what this is about. And if, like Lulu said, your purpose, I focus on being righteous. I'm focused on nothing else but trying to do the right thing and be good to people. You know, that's what I focus on. Everybody has their own agenda. And you have to recognize that whatever that purpose is and whatever you believe in, that's coming from within you. It's coming from the God within you. We were created in that image. And if you're not going to read the words for what the words mean, then there is no sense in reading a book that you're not ready to unpack and decipher what the linguistics are behind it and the history. I'm not saying that the book is not a good book. I'm just saying that things are presented to us in such a way where we are told we need to focus on the knowledge while everybody else around us is making the money off of us. I watched a real good documentary the other day. Miss Laney, you're going to have to chime in on this. I had to find that brother on LinkedIn. I ain't playing, because he done a great job. I mean, you really got to check that out. And not only am I going to give an ode to that, I'm going to give an ode to Dr. Rogers, our historian on the line, because as I was watching that, Out of the Dark, is Miss Laney, ain't that what it's called, Out of the Dark?
sounds good.
Yeah. Oh,
but Brother Christopher Reiser, y'all gonna check him out. Out of the Darkness.
Out of the Darkness.
Yeah, Out of the Darkness. Check that out. That was a great documentary.
Miss Chambers called Out of the Dark.
Out of the Dark. And so y'all got to check that out. Thank you for that, Miss Lani. Because as I sat there and watched the documentary, I said, man, Dr. Rogers, this is what we taught in the summer to our students. You know what I'm saying? A sense of identity and understanding your origins and where you really come from and the history behind all this other stuff that you're being told and watered down and remixed. And, you know, let's get to truth. You know, when we looking at grief, let's get to truth and what you really mad about. Okay. Because grief is not always just the grief. The grief is the loss of a lot of things, a loss of reality, a loss of being able to continue because of the conditions we put on people that we have no business placing on people. Acknowledge that, people.
Yeah. And everybody has different, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Ms. Savon.
Everybody has different makeup and everybody has different experiences. And based on those experiences, they have their own perceptions and how they perceive things. And so with that being said, two people can go through the same trauma, as everybody knows, and have two totally different ways of responding, reacting, and being impacted by that trauma. And their grief process may not be the same. You know, it's some situations, some people, you know, they like to compare and say things like, well, you know, I went through it and I didn't react that way. But it's like, but the dynamics of your situation and the factors that, and the variables that were involved were totally different. And I also believe that depending on the trauma that you may have in your life or the wounds that you may have in your life may affect why your grieving process may be the way that it is in some cases, whether it's stretched out and exhausted or whether it's quick and short. Because honestly, when my grandmother passed away, even though I knew she was dying, it brought up feelings of abandonment because my mother abandoned me. So now my actual grandmother who raised me as my mother, it was almost like I was being abandoned again. So I had to revisit an old trauma from a new trauma that occurred. And so there were several different grieving processes that I was dealing with at the same time. And I don't think that we know that we can have more than one face, more than one side of that grieving process. You know, I was grieving a grandmother. I was grieving a person who caused me a lot of trauma. I was grieving the fact that my mother lost her mom and how that must have felt for her. You know, it's like, it's so many different dynamics to grief that it can't just be put into it can't just be bottled up and then a lid put on it and just said, okay, we're going to just put that in the corner because I made peace with that. Because when the Father's Day, the Mother's Day, when other things come around or things that trigger that trauma, trauma is also a catalyst for spiritual growth. So it's not that the things should not bother you anymore, or it's not that it shouldn't take that much of a hold or an impact on you. It's really, there's a saying, I think, by some philosopher or something, and it says something like, when there's a crack in the foundation, the light can enter. And it's like, that is pretty much a soul growth opportunity. That's how I started looking at it. It's like a soul growth opportunity for you to figure out what is in me that may need to be shifted, changed, or dealt with, or, you know, retouched or touched up. You know what I mean? You just never really know. And I think if we come at things with more of an open mind and not so in the box, I think that we will see things on multi-dimensional levels instead of just the reality that we live in, because in reality, we do live in multiple realities. So that's it.
Mm-mm. Let me let you know right now. I just need one reality at one damn time. Let me let you know. That's something else. That's something else over there that y'all don't even begin. We're going to need a whole metaphysical discussion on, because it gets deeper. It gets deeper and deeper, and you're going to be running right down this rabbit hole. But to your point, Ms. Devine, you are so right. You know, you are so right. You need to figure out how you're going to make sense of it all. I feel like this ain't the NC exam right now, so if I'm wrong, somebody correct me next time we talk. But I'm feeling like there's some Gestaltian type of theory coming to my mind, where we're trying to make sense of it all and figure out how that loss, we can now move on and make it meaningful. And so I got to bring it back to just saying, creating what you want instead of being stuck in what you don't have. Miss Ayala, she killed it when she said, I said, girl, come on, sister. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. That's my queen. Yes, that is how to start figuring out how to reshape and reframe what it is that's happening around us. We've been doing that for years. Yeah, all our lives. When it comes to grief, we get shut down. We can't do nothing. We can't move on. And half the time, be people y'all ain't even talk to on a regular. I ain't going to say your damn those relationships didn't matter. Not saying that. I'm just saying, let's be real. Hold on to the people you got while you still able to hold on to them. If you love them, call them. Act like you love them. Engage with these people instead of, engaging at the funerals when you get together and you don't see each other no more again, you know, until it's another funeral. Stuff like that. Engage with your family. Engage with your loved ones and the people you say you care about. So like Lulu said earlier, when you lose them, you know you've done everything that you had to do for you to have a good relationship with them. Okay, because you're not in control of how long somebody is going to be in your life. These people be in your life for a reason and a season. You understand that? So we have to hold on to those memories and be able to know, oh, that was a good memory. That's a good time. When these holidays come up, we need to think about how we were able to bond with these folks. You know, because these losses are real. Even if it's a relationship, you had a relationship, you was in love with somebody and you ain't with them at the end of the year, you know, things like that. Think about the good times, you know, and understand that you have to grow from certain things when they don't fit you. Listening to those feelings, what your intuition say. You in a bad relationship, but you ain't going to look right because you still with her. Let it go. If it don't fit your spirit, let it go. You understand that? Talking about the loss of all things, not just deaths, but deaths of relationships, deaths of careers, death to emotions that you have had harbored inside you. Go ahead and breathe on that. Let it go. Go ahead tonight when you take a bath or you get in the shower, just take a moment to breathe and show yourself some gratitude. This is the end of the year. Allow yourself. Give yourself permission. I will give myself permission tonight. Today. My God, today, Black Sister Talk, you can breathe. This is the last shot. I had to say, wait a minute. Something happened over here.
Yeah, the top of the hour.
End of the hour.
The end of the hour.
I'm just grateful to be with you guys here on Black Sister Talk and look forward to continuing this on with you guys in 2021. So let's let go.
Open the door, I need to see your face. Rachel.
Oh, no.
tell your jaded baby, wipe your eyes. Don't let him see that he got the best of you. Girl, I'll take the rest of you. Look, I got a question for you. Is it worth it? Real love, do you think you deserve it? Cut him off, go and find your purpose and get you a nigga that's solid. Personally, I'll do more than support your dreams, baby, get you a me. It's time to boss up, fix your credit, girl, get at it, get your bag up. Hit that gym and get back fine, go get that degree. Go, girl, focus on me. Unlock potential that you didn't know you had in you. Fuck that nigga, hey. Oh, yeah, it's time to mix it up and get your clothes, girl. I know that you gon' get it, you got so much. Don't let nobody tell you that it's over. I want you to know that, girl, you got it, you got it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You got it, you got it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you my little baby. I'm gon' make it known. Let that nigga hate, girl. What is he gon' do? Get back your honor. It's cool, I know you stay down. Girl, fuck that drama. If it ain't about the money bounce, you know you the shit. I don't even gotta say, ay. I know you gon' win, shawty. You just gotta play, ay. Girl, I'm gon' let you know you got it. Every chance that I get, don't you doubt it. No, I'm not perfect, but I
promise. I see two. Hey, girl.
Hey.
Are you late again?
Sorry. What's up with
all? Vita took me shopping.
Oh, hold on. You got you glowing.
Oh, you already know.
Girl, what happened to Brandon?
Fuck that nigga. I know that's right. Yeah,
yeah. It's time to mix it up and get your glow, girl. I know that you gon' get it. You got so your glow, girl. I know that you gon' get it. You got so.